This meeting is now being recorded.
Good afternoon, and welcome to the I-95 Corridor Coalition Computer-Aided Dispatch, Ways to Integrate into TMC Systems webinar. We're happy that you could join us this afternoon. We are seeing some more folks joining in, so I think we'll give it just another minute. Denise, would you like to start with the housekeeping? Would you like me to start with the housekeeping items?
Yes, that'd be great, Joanna, if you could. Thank you.
Sure. I am Joanna Regal from KMJ Consulting, and we are assisting the I-95 Corridor Coalition with this webinar. We would like to review a few housekeeping items before we begin. As you know, participants are in listen-only mode. Questions? If you have questions regarding the audio, you can press star zero, or if you have questions with the web or audio, you can call 484-557-7009, and we will try to help you out with that. As you heard, this webinar is being recorded. Importantly, all presentations will be posted to the I-95 Corridor Coalition website, and all registrants will receive a link to the presentations after they have been posted. If you have not signed in, if you signed in with an agency name, if you could send a chat to the host, we may check in with you just to find out who, in fact, is participating for that agency so that we can make sure that those participants receive a link to the presentations. We greatly appreciate it. To ask questions, we're asking that you use the chat box in the lower right-hand corner of your screen. Simply type in the question and press enter, and then the questions will be monitored, and then they will be answered at the end of each session as well as at the end of the webinar. Just a quick overview of today's agenda. Denise Marco from the I-95 Corridor Coalition will be providing a welcome and overview. She will be followed up by our presenters. The first one is Robert Heller of the Southwest Research Institute, followed by John Horner from Q-Free North America, and then John McClellan from Minnesota DOT. Finally, you can participate in this webinar in two ways. First of all, by asking questions, and then we have several polls throughout the webinar that we'd like to have your input. We want to thank all of you who registered for today's webinar. We had nearly 130 folks registered from 35 states, and we have representatives from the types of agencies shown below. Okay, we have come to the first poll for our webinar today. We'd like to ask, have you done CAD integration with your ATMS or TMC systems? So if you could please select your response. Okay, it looks like we're going to end the poll in 3, 2, 1. Okay. At this point, I would like to turn it over to Denise Marco, who is your host for the webinar. Denise?
Thanks, Joanna. Good afternoon, everyone. Thanks for taking the time out of your schedule today. We're looking forward to an informative webinar about CAD integration. As we get started, I just wanted to give you a very brief introduction to the Corridor Coalition. As most of you know, we are a coalition of 16 states from Maine to Florida, and the District of Columbia. The corridor's got approximately 35% of the nation's VMT, or about 21% of our road miles, and about 565 million long-distance trips annually. So the corridor is really a big transportation network. And so one of the goals that of the coalition is really to look at TISMO programs and topics and see how we can provide a forum to exchange information regionally. So we have our signature member exchanges and webinars, and we take a look at present topics that have been discussed in our strategic planning summits. These are the topics that our members have requested, and this is one of them. CAT integration is one of the topics that came up at our recent planning summit. So three times a year, we open up our webcasts to the nation, to our non-members, so that others can also benefit. And today is one of those webcasts, so we hope you enjoy it. We have three speakers, as Joanna mentioned, on the agenda: Robert Heller, John Horner, John McClellan. I'll introduce them individually before each of their presentations. There are two important distinctions today in that Robert Heller and John Horner are going to be speaking about direct CAD to ATMS integration. And John McClellan from Minnesota DOT, he is going to be Minnesota DOT integrates differently, so you're going to be hearing two different scenarios for CAD. So what you see in front of me are the speakers as one, two, and three in the order they're going to appear. Before we get started with Robert Heller, though, we do have one more quick question to poll the audience. So there's five of these throughout the webinar. This is number two. We just asked, trying to find out and gather data about CAD integration. So why integrate CAD into your system? And if you check all that apply for us, that would be a great piece of information as we start to capture data and report out back to you guys. So there's improving incident response and quick clearance, to receive timely data from incident responders, to automate data input, to improve the data to populate the TRAV info systems, or we had no real-time source for incident data in our current system. So as I mentioned, during the webcast, we're going to be capturing some basic core data relative to the CAD integration, and we plan to share the data with the attendees. This is number two out of of five. And so it looks like we should end this, Joanna, in what, 3, 2, 1? Okay. So as Robert's speaking, I'm going to introduce Robert in just a second. As Robert's speaking, Joanna noted we're going to be monitoring the chat box in the event that someone has a question. Remember, due to the large audience, you're all on mute, and the questions need to be typed in the chat box. And also, as she noted, if you entered the chat box with an agency name and you want to receive some of the polling results or you want to receive some of the data that we're going to be capturing, if you'd send your name to Joanna via the private chat, or they may ping you if you're listed as an agency. That way you can get a link to the presentations as well as the audio when it's ready. Okay? So with that, let me introduce Robert Heller. He is, Robert's the program director at Southwest Research. During his 33 years of employment at SWERI, he's conducted projects in ITS, electronic patient medical records. He's worked in military unmanned autonomous vehicles, military avionics, and a host of other stuff. His ITS experience, it includes work for TxDOT, Florida, with their SunGuide system, and the New England states of New Hampshire, Maine, and Vermont with their Compass system. He's currently managing a group which performs something called white hat hacking on field networks and automotive embedded systems. He earned a BS, an MS, and a PhD in computer science from Southern Methodist University. In his personal time, this is the best part about this bio, Robert, he's an adult leader in Boy Scouts of America. He's a mediocre amateur potter, a lousy woodworker, and a gardener with a black thumb. So with that being said, I'm going to now turn it over to Robert.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
See if I remember how to do this.
Click the bottom. All you need is the bottom left corner with the arrow. There you go.
At Southwest Research, we have done a couple of different CAD integrations. The two I want to talk about today are the ones that I'm most familiar with, and that's one that was done for Florida Department of Transportation back in 2007. That was with SunGuide Release 3. SunGuide is now a rather that was in the infancy stages of SunGuide. We're now up around a Release 7 or something. And then a couple of years ago, we did one for New Hampshire DOT as part of the New England Compass project. Both of these pieces of software are part of a large code base that we refer to as ActiveITS. That code base is common among not just the FDOT and New England projects, but also with TxDOT Lone Star. It's a common code base in all three states. It is all state-owned software. This is not software that Southwest owns a single line of code in. It was all done as a work for hire, and the states allow us to license the software to other government entities. So as we license it to somebody else, they benefit from all of this code that has already been developed for all of these states. So if you happen to license this software and you're running a CAD system that's already been integrated, you can benefit from that integration. When we did the integration for SunGuide, the feed that we're getting from the statewide CAD system is a filtered feed. They take out all of the stuff, all of the events that are non-traffic related. It's a single statewide feed from a single CAD vendor. There is a different CAD install per. What just happened? There it is. The slides are back. There is a single CAD install per Florida Highway Patrol troop. Troop boundaries and district boundaries are not necessarily the same. The CAD feed does provide latitude and longitude. Each of the CAD installs pushes a single file per troop to a common site. The files contain new and existing events. When an event is closed by the CAD system, it just disappears from the feed. Individual troops, the CAD systems for the individual troops may drop off at any time, and the others may appear. So while I say it's a single feed, there are really different feeds from each of the the FHP troops, and they may or may not be online and pushing data. There is a single interface that runs that processes those files from the FHP troops. It provides then a single place that a SunGuide install may go and subscribe to CAD events. The subscriptions are based on roadways and counties. It is then up to the individual SunGuide installs across the state to process that CAD data. New Hampshire, again, has a filtered feed. There is a single New Hampshire State Police Center which is running their CAD system. We don't connect to that, we reconnect directly to that CAD system rather than going through an intermediate file. There is a translation from CAD codes. We're getting raw data essentially from the CAD system, and those need to be translated into ATMS event fields. The location information coming out of the New Hampshire CAD system is different, though, because it contains a county, a city, and a street address. There is no latitude and longitude, and this causes a little bit of problems with that feed. Also, all of the fields in the feed that could potentially include personally identifiable information are stripped. That includes comment fields, which CAD operators may actually use to include interesting information, as well as some of the other fields. If you look at this diagrammatically, then you find that with the FHP system, you've got multiple feeds going into a single CAD interface, and then the multiple SunGuide installs across the state subscribing to the data in which they're interested. With New Hampshire, there is a single CAD system. We have a direct, the New Hampshire DOT New England Compass system has a direct connection to that CAD system. That is through a center-to-center SOAP implementation. And so it's a much simpler system. Well, when either system receives an event from the CAD system, whether it's SunGuide or New England Compass, the operator actually sees an event alert. And this is a sample of an event alert that may have occurred in Florida. From that event alert, an operator has a number of things they can do. And one of the things they can do, of course, is to create a new event. There's some other options about secondary events, dismissing the event as a false alarm or saying, yeah, I've already got that one. If they choose to create an event, then the system opens up the event management screen. From the event management screen, the operator completes or updates the different fields in the events. They will check on the latitude, longitude, make sure it's where we think it is. And then that, from that point on, the event is managed internally by the ATMS. An ATMS operator may do other things with the event. They'll dispatch against the event. They'll dispatch first responders. They're not dispatching LE, but they're dispatching other first responders to the event, road rangers within the event, ambulance, tow trucks, whatever else is necessary. But that management of the event is separate from the management of the event with the CAD system. There is no backfeed to the CAD system with updates to the events. You may get a CAD, the system may get a CAD update that says, well, the event is now, it wasn't really there, it's over here, or law enforcement has arrived on site, tow trucks have arrived on site, the event's been cleared. You may get event updates like that, and those events are processed by the ATMS, by SunGuide, or New Hampshire Compass, but any updates from the ATMS do not flow back into the CAD system. In doing both of these, there was some things that were common, some common issues that we ran into. There are, you will run into, if you do this, documentation errors. With FDOC, for instance, we ran into some issues about how the files were going to be named, what the fields actually looked like, order of the fields within the messages that were coming across from the FHP CAD system. Within New Hampshire, the documentation for how to connect to the system, whether it was the URL, protocols, passwords, usernames, the connection information was erroneous. The disposition codes were not always clear, and some of the disposition codes were ambiguous and could map to several different kinds of events. Well, one of the interesting things that we found with the New Hampshire feed was that even after an event was closed, we got a closed message from the CAD system. The CAD system continued to issue changes to that event. We were unprepared for that. Sometimes the way operations occur within a CAD system can cause problems. In both systems, we found that for I-95, Interstate 95, 95, there were different names that were used by different operators. What is the name of Interstate 95? Is it Interstate 95 or one of the multiple different synonyms for I-95? There were issues with location accuracy. Even if you got a latitude and longitude, sometimes those latitude and longitudes were approximate. Somebody would enter a latitude and longitude from a motorist who wasn't on site. They may be passing from the other side of the interstate. You may not get good location accuracy. Because of that, you may locate an event on the wrong side of the roadway. And then, of course, the issue of abbreviations, not only abbreviations, but multiple names for a roadway. in Florida, there are most of the freeways not only have state route numbers, but they also have local names. The B is one of the freeways in Orlando, but it's referred to as the B. It's also referred to as the Beach Line. It also has a state route number, and any one of those may be used to refer to the same stretch of road. As I said, with FDOT, they do feed latitude and longitude, but there are always issues with latitude and longitude, and that doesn't really matter for a CAD system because it's trying to get, with a CAD system, you're trying to get a law enforcement officer in the general location of an event, and then they can use their eyes to find the event, whereas with an ATMS, many ATMSs, and these two ATMSs in particular, both feed a traveler information system. A traveler information system is taking that latitude and longitude, locating the event on a map that's then being viewed by the public. You can imagine the kind of feedback the DOT gets when a traveler looks at an event, says, oh, it's on the northbound lanes and it's really on the southbound lanes, and they make travel decisions based on that. The feedback is not always nice. So those things matter, and trying to get the latitude and longitude right matters a lot. Then you've got update frequencies, with not only from data lag through the system, but also from a CAD system. Remember, you're trying to dispatch a law enforcement officer to work the event, and they're more interested, and rightly so, working the incident than providing updated data for the incident. If you really want to increase the probability of success of such an effort, the first thing you really need to do is realize you've got two different contracting agencies. You've got FHP managing their CAD vendor, and you've got the DOT managing their ATMS vendor. Two different contracting agencies, two different vendors. My slides disappeared again. You really need to identify at the low level developer points of contact, to have the ATMS vendor asking questions through the DOT, asking questions of FHP, asking questions of their CAD vendor is a long way around, and the information flow to and from the two developing activities can be delayed. The data can be, the best word I can think of is munged. It can introduce errors. It's not a good way to facilitate corrections to documentation. The two contracting agencies need to make sure that they coordinate the development schedules of the two developing activities. The priorities of those schedules need to be coordinated. You need to remember that delays on either side of those activities can cause problems to the other. And finally, the developer, the ATMS integrator, really needs to have access to a good, reliable, dynamic feed, test feed from the CAD system. With FDOT, we had no access to a feed until we were into acceptance testing, and we discovered some interesting things in acceptance testing that we didn't know about the documentation. With New Hampshire, we had a dummy feed, but the dummy feed was not dynamic. Every time we accessed it, we got the same data, and so we came to rely on static data rather than dynamic data. That's all I got to say, and take questions.
Robert, I have a question for you. If you are a state agency and you are looking to say, I want to look at CAD integration, if you had to say step one, two, and three, where should I start? What would be the best guidance to give an agency to say, how do I start this process of CAD integration? Does that make sense?
Yes, it does make sense. I think you need to get your ATMS vendor involved early, looking at the kind of data that the CAD system can provide. And then jointly with the ATMS vendor, assess whether the information that is available from the CAD system is useful, whether the information is timely, and what kinds of roadblocks you may run into in the data that will actually be delivered to the ATMS system. That decision early will tell you whether or not you even want to do the effort. It sounds like a great thing to do, but the data is not always as good as you would like it. And I think that's the major thing, is figuring out if the data really is worth the effort. I think with these two efforts, some of the districts in Florida use the data, some of them don't. And it's because of whether the data is reliable, whether the data is timely, and whether the data is accurate.
Robert, we do have some questions in the chat box. Can I ask you quickly? One of them, the first one from New Jersey DOT is, how long did the
long did it take?
How long did the integration take from concept to live for each agency, Florida versus New Hampshire?
For New Hampshire, it was an overall two-year development effort, and this was part of the development effort. So breaking out just the CAD integration would be difficult. The CAD integration itself was not terribly difficult. It was a couple of months worth of developer effort, but because it was part of a larger program from Word Go to Word deployment and going live was about a two-year effort. If it had been done independently, it probably would have been done in 4 to 6 months. And it's probably a similar effort with FDOT as well.
Second question. Dave Wolf is asking, what are the institutional barriers you encountered and were able to overcome in each state? Were formalized MOUs developed for each state, and how often are they refreshed?
I can address the first. From a developer standpoint, the institutional barriers really were that of communication with the other vendor. All of our questions for the other vendor went through a single point of contact with New Hampshire State Police. He was not a developer. He was not doing the work, but everything was filtered through him, and so there was some delay there. And that was one of the points that I brought out. Formalized MOUs developed? Yes, there were formalized MOUs developed. I do not know how often they're being refreshed. I can't address that part of the, because we were not part of the MOU process, but I know they were there.
That's great.
Mike, some of the fields were structured. We would call that a structured field. Some of it was freehand data. The comment fields coming from FDOT were freehand data. The interesting thing about the freehand data is that while it is free form and a CAD operator could virtually type anything they wanted into it, typically the CAD operators develop their own shorthand, and you find a lot of similarity between messages even across different operators in different operation centers with the CAD system, and a lot of the data looks very similar. So while it's not structured, there's some structure in it simply because of the way operations were being done, and we could actually extract some information from those freeform fields. This is one of the reasons that We didn't automate, the system didn't, the interface did not automatically create events in the ATMS that it went through an operator, and an operator could look at the content of those fields and make judgment about what information should be included in the ATMS event.
All right.
Anybody else? Well, thank you.
Robert, thank you. I know that there are questions at the end. Oh, we got one more. Hang on. One more from Ben. Hey, show. What percentage of all CAD events are being added to the ATMS or only the ones selected by the TOC operators? Does that make sense to you?
Yes. The system did not automatically create ATMS events. Everything went through the operators. That's the way both systems were spec'd. That's the way both systems were done. I don't know how many of the events that were, of the event alerts were are actually being processed into events. I don't know that answer.
Okay. Well, Robert, we have a question period at the end of this as well. So if you'll hang on, I know that there's several people that we still have folks that might be typing.
And if there are other questions, there's my email, and I'll be happy to answer the questions coming in if you want to send them to me as well.
Great, great, okay. Moving forward, before we get to our second speaker, this is our third question, our instant poll. The question is, what have you encountered as or feel are the obstacles to integrating the data? And if you guys wouldn't mind weighing in on this, is it cost as an obstacle to integrating the data? Check all that apply, please. Law enforcement sensitivity, lack of stakeholder interest and involvement, not sure how to proceed, or obstacles outside the IT agency. And then I will, Robert is typing in the box a response to Giselle's question as we're doing this as well. So, all right, let's, Justin, let's say in 3, 2, 1, let's close the poll. Move on to the second presenter. Thank you very much. Okay. And Giselle, I think that Robert is typing a response to your question as well. We'll come back to it if not. Second speaker today is John Horner. And very briefly, to give you an update on John. John is the director of ATMS product strategy at Q-Free North America. He offers a rare combination. He's got experience in transportation systems engineering, software development. He's worked for years as a software developer in the publishing and the financial industries. And since moving to the transportation sector, he has served as the technical lead on many of the ATMS projects or TravInfo projects with system integration. His focus now in his current role is he is there to ensure that the Q-Free products meet the needs, the user needs, while, I guess, exploiting the capabilities of emerging technology. So he is working with VDOT and is going to speak to the multiple integrations that have taken place over in Virginia. He has a graduate degrees in both civil engineering and computer science and is a licensed PE. So, John, can you hear me?
I can. Thank you.
All right. With that, I'll turn it over to John.
All right. Thank you, everybody. I'm going to talk a little bit about our experience with CAD integration. This is an outline of the approach I'm going to take. I will start out by describing exactly what I mean by CAD integration, briefly describing my background in it so you know where I'm coming from. And from there, I'm going to walk through the process that we typically use when we're doing a CAD integration, and we'll discuss at each step in the process what are some issues which typically come up. When I say CAD integration, this is very similar to what Robert just talked about. I am talking about automated extraction of data from a 911 dispatch system. You'll also hear me use the term PSAP, Public Safety Answering Point. Anywhere that 911 calls come in, from the public, and they get responded to by law enforcement. These systems automatically pull data out of the CAD system in real time and inject it into some system at the TMC. This data flow is fully automated, and in all the cases I'm going to refer here, it is one way. It is just data going from the CAD system to the ATMS, which makes it a fairly modest effort, both in terms of deployment and then maintenance also. We've been doing this for a while. Our first experience was with Virginia State Police back in 2004. I was not personally involved in that. I got involved in 2007 with the Hampton Roads area, did a regional integration with many of the municipal and county county PSAPs in that region. There's been other regional developments in Virginia, and that system was consolidated statewide in 2011. West Virginia has also done a good number of 911 integrations. Their goal is to pull data from every 911 dispatch center, which contains any interstate mileage. This is a map of it's not quite current, but a relatively current map of the integrations that we have right now. We've got somewhere between 40 and 50 active integrations, and that encompasses about 12 different CAD vendors. So let me be clear on what these dots mean. Virginia does have a statewide, state police have their own CAD system. So in the case of Virginia, those dots are, in addition to the statewide system, those are county or municipal 911 centers, which are integrated as well. In West Virginia, all of the dispatch is done through the counties, so those are the various 911 centers throughout West Virginia, which are integrated as well. Why do we do this? The value of a CAD integration to the DOT is readily apparent and very strong. And this data is a fantastic source of incident detection. We've got millions and millions of automated detection devices out there on the highways, that being drivers with cell phones. When we first installed the system, it immediately became the primary way that VDOT detected crashes, and in some studies, up to 88% of the crash detection was through the VSP CAD integration. When it was integrated, VDOT also noticed a sharp reduction in clearance time. The main thing that is driving that number, I believe, is that prior to the integration, there were lots of minor incidents which were going completely unmanaged, and VDOT never even knew about them. And once those numbers got averaged in, the clearance time dropped. That may sound like it's fiddling with the numbers, but what it really is a data quality issue. We've improved the data quality, and VDOT is now getting better information about their actual clearance time. So while the value to the DOT is very clear, it's a little bit more difficult to quantify what is the value to the 911 center or to the law enforcement agency there. Hopefully we are reducing the amount of communication overload their communication overhead that they have to do to communicate with DOT during crashes. That's difficult to quantify, though. They may get improved situational awareness if we provide some sort of feedback on information available from neighboring CAD systems. But in general, it's the benefit to the 911 center is fairly intangible in that it doesn't necessarily improve their day-to-day mission. So when we talk to the 911 centers, we need to talk about how this benefits the public at large and it may be difficult to make a case in terms of the 911 mission itself. All right. Once we decide that we want to integrate some CAD data, the first step is figuring out where to go to get it. Law enforcement patrol responsibilities are, in many states, quite a patchwork. The responsibility may be broken up geographically. Different agencies will have different responsibility for different areas, and it may also be broken up according to roadway classification. It's not uncommon for the state police to have interstates, but then if you get onto a major primary road, just off of that, you're looking at the local law enforcement. Lots of DOTs have a pretty good handle on what the the patrol responsibilities are for law enforcement in the area, but you may not be aware that the dispatch responsibilities may be still more complicated. There are cases where a single 911 center will dispatch multiple agencies. 911 centers may forward calls from one from one center to another, depending on the nature and location of the call. So that's something to get a handle on before you go out and start talking to the 911 centers. Look for pre-existing integrations whenever possible. Many 911 centers have integrated data with each other already. So if you can tap into one network that's already integrated, that maximizes the value for the DOT. And of course, from the DOT perspective, we want to keep the roads moving. So go where the important critical roads are. And use any existing relationships. Good existing relationships are a big factor in making these integrations successful. So where you have somebody who knows somebody is a great place to start. Also, if you have any existing CAD integrations, look for other agencies that may use the same CAD vendor. And that'll simplify the process for the next integration as well. Once you've identified where you want to integrate, the next step is how do you get the data? And pursuant to one of the questions, the technical issues are never the limiting factor in what you can accomplish and how long it takes. The biggest issues are always institutional issues. So just know that going in there and understand that folks at the 911 center may not have the same attitudes that the folks in the TNC do. The cultures are very different. The most simplistic way to put that is law enforcement tends to be very operationally focused, and DOT tends to be much more engineering, analytically focused. So just don't expect people to have the same attitudes on every topic. One way this comes out is the level of willingness to share data. DOTs typically are all about sharing data. Law enforcement agencies do not necessarily have the same attitude. Much of their data is very sensitive. And so that they tend to think of all of their data as sensitive sometimes because of that. So be prepared to have discussions about this, about data where the sensitive data is and how to avoid touching that. When you walk into a 911 center, make sure that you are not asking them to change their operations, and make sure that you emphasize that fact and make that clear. Nobody wants somebody from the outside to come in and tell them how to do their business. So make sure it is very, very clear that you're not asking the 911 center to change their operations or add any extra workload or burden to their 911 center, to their operators. Despite the differences, there are a lot of allies out there in the law enforcement community. One great place to look for those is people who've been through TEM training from Sharp 2. Lots of folks took their TEM training under the Sharp 2 program and got religion on quick clearance. There are people out there who understand the clearance and are eager to work with you to do it if you can find them. For any of these projects, be careful not to let the IT shop take over the project. As we said earlier, the benefits of these projects to 911 center are intangible. So if you end up working primarily with an IT person who doesn't have the big picture they may not be as motivated to make this project move forward and can get sort of bogged down. There was a question about written MOUs or institutional agreements. I've seen cases where there is not a single thing written down, and I've seen cases where there is a formal, legally approved MOU. I've never seen a case where having an MOU saved the day, and I've never seen a case when the lack of an MOU caused a problem. I think it really depends more on what your organization's legal and procedural requirements are. If you need an MOU, get started on it early. That can often be the thing that takes longer than anything else. So if you need that, get started early. So while institutional issues are the big topic, there are some technical issues that will need to be sorted out. These days, almost all CAD systems have some kind of export feature. It may be an XML feed. It may be a file export. It may be a particular view to the database that they allow. There's typically something there. Older CAD systems, you may need to get a little more creative, but I've never run into a CAD system where you just could not get the data out. Again, we talked about sensitive data. That's going to be your biggest issue, making sure that you don't touch anything that you're not supposed to touch. And in line with the sensitive data, we need to make sure that we are respecting all security procedures for the 911 center. Keep in mind that there is security itself and there is also the perception of security, and both are important. It's in order to make a project like this successful, the folks in both data centers need to be comfortable that their data is being used appropriately. Some tools we use to help with that, we typically will place a local hardware, either physical or virtual, in the 911 center on their network. That local node receives data from the CAD export and then pushes the data out to the TMC. What this lets us do is the assurance that we're not modifying their systems at all. We're not touching any of their system. We're just adding it on their network. And by pushing the data from that local node, they don't have to receive any inbound connections to their network. So if you tell people that you've got to open up your firewall to accept connections, that gets people a little nervous. So we just avoid that conversation entirely. Be aware that many CAD systems are integrated with federal law enforcement databases, and being integrated with those federal law enforcement databases puts very strict legal constraints on how they are allowed to integrate with other systems. So find out early if you've got a constraint like that and how it's going to impact your project. Data filtering, Robert talked about this a bit, it is critical to making a project successful on both ends. On the 911 side, filtering is crucial to ensure that we are not touching any sensitive data. On the DOT side, it's crucial that operators are getting data of value, and two, not being inundated with too much data. I always tell people it's easy to go from not knowing what's going on because you don't have enough information to not knowing what's going on because you have too much information. There's lots of different tools in the filtering toolbox. The best way I like to visualize it is imagine a spreadsheet. So when I talk about event type filters, there we are filtering out 911 calls which don't have anything to do with traffic. So if a warrant is being served or there's a break-in entering, we don't even see those events. So in the spreadsheet example, think of that as filtering out rows of the spreadsheet. Then we also want to filter out data fields. Think of that. Is there a problem with my sound? I just seen something in the chat box. Hello? I should keep going. All right. I'll keep going. Okay. In the spreadsheet example, field selection is filtering out certain data fields that we don't ever care about, such as which units are dispatched or something like that. In the spreadsheet sample example, this is like filtering out columns. Content selection is filtering out content selection is filtering within a certain cell based on the contents of the cell. There is certain sensitive information that based on the structure of the data, we can tell that we want to suppress it. An example might be social security numbers. It might be license plates, stuff that we can filter out based on its structure. Different centers are going to have different levels of comfort with that kind of filtering, but it is a tool that you've got. We can also filter data geographically. This is primarily for the benefit of the DOT. If you've got, for example, a particular corridor that you want to get data from, we can filter out events which do not fall in that corridor. The narrative field is always going to be an issue, a big issue. Typically, CAD systems have a notes field or where operators can type in free text, and often that's where some of the most valuable information is. The problem is, since it is free form, it's difficult to ensure that no sensitive data gets through that way. That's going to be a subject of discussion, and you probably will need to look at some data samples of how they're actually using the narrative field in that center. When we're having discussions about filtering, make sure you're talking to somebody who understands what the data means and how it's used operationally. You do not want to have these discussions with the IT person because that person knows where the database is. That's not the problem you're trying to solve here. You want to be talking with, often there's a role called a CAD administrator who manages the CAD system from the operational side. If there's not a well-defined role, there's often an operator who's known as the CAD guru. Look for somebody who really understands what the data means operationally. All right, once you get the data, and a very important aspect to making it successful is to have appropriate expectations. Understand that much of this data is unverified. Any nut job can dial 911 and say Bigfoot was crossing 995 and got hit by a truck. And depending on the 911 center may need to respond in some sense because of processes or laws. So your operators the TMC operators need to understand that. Also understand that 911 operators are not typically concerned with traffic management. They're probably not going to be putting information in about specific lane closures and so forth. That difference of an approach can cause inappropriate expectations. I one time had a case where a TMC operator called the 911 center and told the folks there, the operators there, they needed to put better information about lane closures in. You can imagine how well this was received at the 911 center. I nearly had to unplug that integration because of that. So make sure the operators on both sides understand what this data is and what it's used for. And not all integrations have the same value. Some because of the nature of the data feed or just the nature of the location provide better value than others. So don't necessarily expect the same results from all of them. But that said, this is one of the best sources for incident detection there is. And in terms of cost benefit, I don't know anything that is better than this data for incident detection. Also, once you have the data, take small steps. I have seen cases where at the kickoff, people get really excited and they want to roll in concurrent with the data integration, roll out joint operational plans. And it gets to be too much, and you bite off more than you can chew. So what I suggest is put the infrastructure in place first, see the data that's actually coming through. Let the TMC operators get used to seeing it, understanding what they're going to get and what they're not going to get, and at that point decide how it can feed back into operational improvements. What makes a successful integration? The data filtering, there's a fine balance between getting enough information to make to maximize the benefit and maintaining and on the other side, maintaining security and not overwhelming folks in the TMC. That's going to be one of your most difficult issues to find that spot. Wherever possible, integrate this data into existing operational tools. Where we've been able to inject the data directly into the HMS or some other incident management system, it's been very successful. We had one case where we integrated the data by presenting it in a website off to the side, which was not part of an incident management system, and we struggled to get operators to use that consistently. do plan for some maintenance. These are not high maintenance systems, but I've seen cases where something like a $75 bill for antivirus software comes in. And the 911 center says, well, we're not going to pay this. And the DOT says, well, I don't have a mechanism for paying this. And we end up spending thousands of dollars in terms of people's time in order to figure out how to write a check for $75. So have some sort of plan in place for that. Also, it doesn't happen often, but CAD systems can change, and just be aware that that can sort of pull the rug out from under you at some point. Once you've got the infrastructure, that's the time to look for how we can build operational improvements on top of this. And a great example of that is in Virginia, in the Virginia State Police integration. They have adopted a practice wherein they type the characters road I into their CAD system, and this is just the VSP CAD operators typing into their existing CAD system. This is not some other system they've got to go to. But when they type those five characters into the narrative field, it triggers a high priority alert in the TMC. So if a CAD operator wants to get the DOT's attention, they don't have to lift their hands off of their keyboard. And they stick with the system they've got, and they know that DOT is going to respond. That's all I've got. I can take questions now, or we can do them later. I apologize if there's any audio. I don't have problems lingering.
John, can you hear me?
I can.
Yes. It was spotty at some point. They're working with the operator on it on the line. It's not you. I think it's the operator line. But just a couple quick questions. There are several in the chat box, and we'll come back to them. But one of them, Mike Giuliano from NJDOT had asked about if you're integrating one CAD with multiples across the state, like PDs, locals, did you have any problems in filtering so many different CADs into the TMC software? I know he did.
Yeah, the filtering in our systems, each 911 center is filtered independently. So all of that happens locally. One of the things we like to tell the 911 center to give them assurances on data security is that the data doesn't even leave doesn't even leave your network. Yes, the filtering with multiple systems is a big issue, but we handled it one system at a time. I don't know if that really answers the question.
Okay. Another question came up as far as what specific functions or operations changed when you integrated CAD that improved the clearance time by 34%?
I think the main issue there is not so much operational changes as a data quality issue. That prior to the integration, there were lots of very minor incidents and which were going completely unmanaged, and the DOT didn't even know that they were happening. Once they started finding out about those minor incidences, they got averaged in with the numbers, and that brought the overall average down.
All right. And Earl Sharp's asking, wanting to know if you envision any changes to CAD integration with the evolution of the next-gen 911 system. Have you guys been thinking about that at all?
Not really. I'm not sure to what degree that will it makes the data security issue even more complicated. If you've got data now, you've got information coming in within the 911 center, you've got data information coming in from multiple sources. How does the CAD operator manage that? I don't know. The main information we're getting is location and type. You know, that sort of core information won't change. Well, where it's going to really become an issue as the narrative becomes still more complicated, probably will complicate the issue of parsing the narrative fields.
Okay. John, there are a couple more questions, but we'll come back to them if it's okay when we get to the question period. Just to keep on schedule here, I'd like to move to John McClellan, but there are some more in the chat box if you also want to take a look at it while we're moving on. Thank you very much. Great pictures. Okay. Number four, a question on our instant poll. And I think this is really important down the road if, for those of you that are looking at CAD integration, what is your preferred method of CAD integration? The use of a CAD integration software system, a direct link to the ATMS or TMC system, not sure. If you guys would weigh in on that, I think that would be helpful to us in our, as we look at the data moving forward. And then we'll move to our last presenter, John McClellan from Minnesota DOT. John Horner, while they're filling out this and actually doing the poll, I do have one other question. New Jersey asked if you've noticed any impacts to the TMC operators based on the increased data that they're getting. I think you mentioned that it's a fine line you've got to balance, but.
Yeah, it's a big concern. I'm trying to think of a case where we had to go back and throttle the filtering. I don't recall a case where we had to go back and cut it down, but it's certainly something you want to prep the operators and the TMC for. And then when you're working out filtering with the 911 center, just make sure that all of the events are at least somewhat related to the traffic events.
Alrighty. We've closed the poll for question number four. Thanks, John. We're going to move to our third speaker today, who is John McClellan from the Minnesota DOT. John, can you hear me?
I can.
All right. John is the Freeway Operations Supervisor at MnDOT's Regional Transportation Management Center. They called it the RTMC. It's located in Roseville, Minnesota. He's worked for the DOT since 2002, and his group is responsible for monitoring 800 metro freeway traffic cameras, locating incidents, deploying signs, coordinating response with state patrol, and dispatching their freeway incident response team called FIRST. He's a regular presenter to first responders on highway safety and emergency traffic control. So you're going to hear a little bit of a different spin on CAD integration right now with John. And with that being said, John, go ahead and take it away.
All right. Thank you. And thanks, everybody, for the opportunity. So we're doing ours a little bit different in that we're not trying to pull data out of somebody else's CAD and then put it into our software, our TMC software, or then buying another software to try to get it into. We're actually using CAD, State Patrol's CAD itself, as the dispatch tool for the TMC operators and then also for the service patrol, and then doing the getting the data out of CAD to then feed the other systems kind of a little bit further down the line. But that was a priority, was to use it as a dispatch tool for the dispatchers. I'll try to keep this kind of high level just to keep a good pace going. For sure, if people have questions about something on a slide, we can loop back to it. A lot of history of working together with State Patrol and DOT. State Patrol is a separate department. They're part of Department of Public Safety, so they are a different department in Minnesota. But the most obvious integration would be this joint operations, this joint dispatch floor. So that's our TMC. It has the combined dispatch for State Patrol, for MnDOT maintenance, and then for traffic management. So traffic management's closest to the picture. Maintenance dispatch is in the metro, and then State Patrol's off in the distance there. Historically, the orientation or the focus for the RTMC has been on the metro area. Since that's about where about half the state's population lives in the metro, so it's a very condensed population. Patrol has they had 9 different dispatch centers across the state, and then they consolidated down to 2 about 5 years ago. So this is now State Patrol, metro, and basically everything north. So 6 other districts up to the Canadian border. And then there's a second, much smaller center in southern Minnesota that has the 3 dispatches for South Minnesota. There's no DOT representation in them. They're co-located at a DOT facility, but there's no traffic management personnel there. The State Patrol does also do some of the DOT functions, like act as an after-hours call-in point to reach somebody from MnDOT if it's an emergency, and they can also they're also responsible for doing the signs in Greater Minnesota, and then after-hours for incidents in Metro, because TMC is not 24/7. So a lot of sharing of toys for many years. So from the TMC side, you're pretty much your typical TMC stuff, traffic management, ramp meters. We also run the HOV program, which has an HOT component that was added in a few years ago. We brand that as MinPass. Traveler info, the entire metro area has detection, so we have our own traffic detection data that we use to run the ramp meters and the travel times. And then we also use that data for to publish a congestion report on an annual basis that shows the congestion across the metro. But the big priority in the last 15 years has been, a big evolution in the last 15 years is becoming an incident management, has been the incident management side for the metro area. So basically our operators, our TMC, we want to know about everything, big, small, whatever it is, we want to know about it and then point a camera at it and try to triage it. The whole metro area is instrumented along with detection. We also have cameras, so we have a pretty robust network to be able to see pretty much everything and to be able to see it quickly. And then we'll determine whether we're going to send the service patrol, put up signs, and then we work very closely with patrol. Everybody in that room's got access to the cameras too, but we're kind of the lead on it. But we're the lead on it. But that's basically what we're trying to do is be aware of everything that's going on the freeway system and then make some determinations after that. There's a couple of pictures of the service patrol, so hybrid with doing both the motorist assist, so changing tires, a little bit of gas, and then the emergency traffic control with the aeroports. And there's a picture inside the truck, so set up exactly the same as the troopers with a tough book on the docking station, and then the using the same iMobile application on the laptops that the troopers use. As far as data goes, in the TMCs, the TMC staff's use of data or recording of incident data, so roughly 97 to 2008, we punched in everything that we saw on camera, everything that we were aware of, we put into an MS Access database front end, and then that went into a SQL database. 2002 to 2008, we had a view only. We had one CAD workstation, one State Patrol CAD workstation, and the intent of that was to be view only. We weren't entering data into it. We were using it to send some messages to patrol, stuff like that, but it was mostly for situational awareness. 2008 is the full integration with State Patrol's CAD, and that's Intergraph is the vendor. But that's us putting in our benchmarks, the lanes clear, the road clear, the arrival times, and the service patrol recording what work that they did at a stalled vehicle. There's a picture of a dispatch workstation, so you can see how front and center it is. For a TMC dispatcher, on the left is our ATMS software called Iris. In the center are those two screens. That's the CAD workstation, and then you've got two camera outputs and then a radio console. So it's right there, right in front of the dispatcher as one of their primary tools, along with the cameras. And then a little close up. And if you've seen CAD before, you know what this looks like. If you haven't seen CAD, you've got a screen, or you've got a box where you put in the incident, and you see the details for that particular incident. And then the bottom left, you've got a list of all the active incidents. And then the bottom right, you've got a list of all of the service patrol trucks that are all logged in and what their status is. In this case, they're all available. And then that other screen, the other monitor that the operator had, you've got a close-up map showing details, exact incident details of where an incident is on the map, and then you've got a second map showing the metro area along with the current AVL, the current location of all the service patrol trucks as they're driving around, and then all of the incidents and where they're located at. So the way it works for us, we're set up as an allied agency with State Patrol, so we get a copy of traffic-related events that are created by State Patrol. So we don't get traffic stops, we don't get drunk drivers, we don't get bank robberies, fights, but we get something. But if it's traffic-related, we get a copy of it. And I say it's a linked copy because some of the elements are – connected, so the location, the event type, and the remarks are all common. If I type comments into a State Patrol event on our site, it will show up for them, and likewise, we see all of their remarks. The close times are separate, so we can close an event and it won't impact Patrol. Patrol can close their event and it won't impact us, which is very important for the benchmarking. And then we'll also create our own events for things that that Patrol's not responding to, or at least not at the moment responding to, especially stalls or things off the freeway or things that the local agencies may see on camera. But we can merge those. We can merge our event into a Patrol event, and the Patrol dispatchers can see our events. They just click a couple of links in the software, and they can see all of our events. But most of them don't do that. We cannot do that on our site, though. So getting data out, that's getting data in, and then we have getting the data back out. So 2008 to 2014, it was basically a CD that we would get once a year from the CAD tech. That was fine for then doing the benchmarks, but there's no real-time use in that. So from 2014 on to now, as part of the agreement with State Patrol, we purchased an official module from the CAD vendor that provides a clear XML feed of those same events that we already get. And then it also includes the TMC remarks. It does not include any of the patrol remarks, which was a way to basically just to simplify not having any chance of getting any protected data by accident. So we get that in real time. It's basically just, it's like a virtual workstation or virtual CAD console. And as soon as it shows up on all the workstations, it shows up in this feed. We pull it out, put it in the Postgres database. That XML has the lat long of the incident, the event type, a common place name, which is important since lat long doesn't necessarily mean much to most people. It's got the times in it, the arrival times and the close times for the field units, breadcrumbs for the service patrol, and then those remarks that we put in. And then that's how we get out to our work that was done, gas, and then also the lanes clear is in that remarks. We do a little bit of reformatting, put it into a CSV, a comma separated value file about once a minute, and that goes to an FTP site, which is then grabbed by our 511 vendor Castle Rock, and then that goes into the CARS system for the public web. And it's also ingested by our ATMS software, which is called Iris, and it's an in-house developed program. It is open source, so anybody out there who wants it, you can take it, but we have our own developer, and it will show up an icon on the map for every CAD event that comes in, as long as it's a traffic-related event. And then we use another open source program called Django to do some analysis. And then both CARS and Iris, the ATMS software, both of those have their own public-facing XML feeds. So that's what Waze, for example, gets its MnDOT data out of CARS. So the big question always comes up, the security, the privacy side. So the way it's set up, we are firewalled off from any of that protected data. We just don't get it. If we put in a license plate, it does not go anywhere else other than a common search. And if we try to open a patrol event, it's either going to be locked or it will just be gibberish. So we cannot see it on our site. It stops on a network level or on an install level. We can see whether or not we've been out with a vehicle before, if we've given them gas before, if we've been with a certain license plate before, it will pop up. And if it's a TMC event, we can open it and look at it and see the comments, and then the troopers can see those too. We can impound vehicles, that's done. You need to get the registered owner information, so that's done by the State Patrol dispatcher, and then they create the event and run the plate, get the RO info, and then we merge the TMC event with the patrol event, and then that's how the service patrol can get that data. We did get a blessing from this from the State Bureau of Criminal Apprehension, who is the key holder, the interface for the police data in Minnesota, and then going to the feds. So this was basically, we were treated as an incidental user or an incidental exposure to the data. So what do we use the data for? Number one is the real-time incident management. That is the huge part of this, is the ability to see everything that's going on. So basically 100% awareness of what State Patrol is aware of as a starting point. The duplication of data entry was tremendous. See that in the next slide, how much duplication we were able to reduce. And then the coordination, it's helped a lot. A lot of things have happened with patrol, getting better, but this is just one more way to increase that coordination. A lot of other things that, going into 511, going into the ATMS software, the TIM self-assessment, and a lot more things that we've done, and then more things in the future, especially if your ATMS knows where the incident is. The ATMS is also running our video wall and doing some of the streaming, so you could do custom camera salvos based on whether there's an active incident on there. So some cool stuff. So that gives you an idea of how many events it was. This is 2015, so you've got 66,000 events that went to TMC in 2015. And you can see over 70% of those came from State Patrol. So right there, with FIRST and State Patrol, that 60,000 events, the TMC operator did not have to create themselves. They could basically go to the next step of entering in their valued information into it without having to create the event. Really was a major help when we were to be able to do that. Okay, so how do you get from A to B? Well, it certainly helped that the DOT helped pay for it. Paid for CAD back in the 90s as part of a big ITS initiative. That also included some of the relationship with Patrol taking on that role of being the after-hours call point for MnDOT statewide. That was all part of this as well. But MnDOT helped pay for a substantial part of State Patrol's upgrade to CAD. 2002, we moved into the center, so all the cats stuck in the same room. 2003, our rudimentary service patrol data system went offline. Actually, ironically enough, because of State Patrol needing our radio frequency to upgrade CAD. So you would say, okay, this is, and then as part of us paying for CAD, there was a line in the contract that said at some point, when Highway Helper is ready, they could be part of CAD. So this is the point in which we went to State Patrol and said, hey, you remember when we gave you guys all this money to buy CAD? We're ready to be on CAD now. And in a perfect world, that would have been right there. We would have been set and we would have been good to go in 2003. Unfortunately, State Patrol had a few other things going on. They were trying to do a statewide rollout of CAD, and basically they were not able to do it at that point and said, yeah, sorry. So that's began the interim period. So 4 years of trying to do RFPs and then being put on hold because somebody else is going to do an AVL system. Let's see how that one works. So that didn't work. Try an RFP again. Back and forth for 4 years until 2007. Basically, our office director was in a meeting with the State Patrol's PSAP manager, and the State Patrol's PSAP manager said, hey, you guys should be on CAD. And thus the clouds parted and the sun shined down and great happiness. I mention this because it was not easy. It was not guaranteed, and a lot of this was serendipity. If we had found something in 2004 and went down that line, we would not have had CAD integration. This is the best solution for us, and I'm glad it worked out this way. I can't think of any better solution for our work process than to have done it this way, but it was luck. I will mention that there were a lot of things that fed into it too, along with luck. There's just the day-to-day evolution in how the troopers and the first drivers got along, the TMC dispatchers, patrol dispatchers getting along. Patrol finished their statewide CAD deployment, so they were able to think about integrating us in, which is good. And then the relationships on all different levels. And some of that coming out of the TIM committees, but just the relationships between the different groups. This is one of these things where somebody down the line can say, no, I don't want to do this. No, this is a bad idea, and you can pretty much, it's going to stop. So you really need everybody to be okay with taking a chance and with doing it and being okay with doing it. So it really, that was the result of many years of other things and other positive relationships. And then the 2008 Republican National Convention was the deadline that we wanted it running by. So we had everybody up on board about a month or so before that. So that was a good deadline. Operator training, CAD's pretty easy. I mean, it's designed to be efficient for the first drivers. It's mostly touchscreen buttons. It's pretty easy. I mean, it's efficient. Same thing for the dispatchers. It's mostly drag and drop. So it works pretty well. I mean, it's way easier than some of the other ATMS softwares or some of the other things that I've seen. It's pretty simple. That's what it's designed to do. To bang in an incident in 10, 15 seconds and move on to the next one, that's what it's designed to do. Okay, so one last thing, secondary crashes. So we approach secondary crash analysis in a little bit different way. We record all of our traffic cameras for about 4 to 5 days. And now we had, with this project, you could now query the database and say, show me all of the crashes that happened yesterday. So take all the crashes that happened yesterday in the metro area and then see how many of those can you see on camera. Can you see the crash on camera, or can you at least see enough of the congestion to make a determination of whether this was the secondary or not? So we did this last year for 2 weeks, and we did it for 2 weeks this year. Last year, average 81 crashes. You can see kind of the mix between how many were really there and how many were duplicates, or they drove off, or it was something that happened a week ago. Average of 48 crashes per day visible, and we came up with basically 2 secondaries a day, or 4%. So I think that feels about right, too, just as an operator, as a dispatcher out there, that feels about right. So kind of a different way to do it, but that's what we came up with for secondary crashes. So that is it for me, and I guess I'll throw it out to the questions then.
Thanks, John. There are some questions in the chat box. Let me go back and see if I can walk through some of them. I do think that there was an earlier question. I think it probably could be directed to any of you. I think Dave Wolf was asking if being co-located with the TMCs, does that also help the CAD process?
For us, it did. It certainly makes it easier when you're running cables. It makes it a lot easier. Our CAD workstations are actually on patrol's network. So I buy a computer, and then I hand that computer over to the state patrol's IT person, and he does the install, and then he plugs the cable in, and basically the cables at our workstation are going right to State Patrol's side. So just from a logistics, it was easier on that side.
Okay. John Horner, are you still there
on the line? I am. Yep.
There is another there was a question as well. Ken Yang asked this. I'm not sure if it's directed to you, but he was asking as well to talk about the standard side of CAD TMC data integration. Does the IEEE 1512 TMB standards, were they being supported? Does that make sense to you at all?
Yeah, it does. It does. I have not yet run into a CAD system which supports really any standard natively. We pull the data out of the CAD system, and then we put it into either IEEE 1512, or we have also used the Common Alerting Protocol standard. So we use them in our system, but I have not seen a CAD system that implements them.
Okay. I think moving on, before we get to, we have a couple more questions. We do have one last polling question to ask of the attendees. We will share these poll results and we will share the data with you all. But this last one has to do with the traffic system technology for your agency. Is run by your organization completely, run by a consultant, run by a separate IT agency, a mixture of several entities. If we could capture any of that information as well, that would be really great. It gives us more of a overview of where CAD sits with many agencies as we try to capture and report out to you all. Okay. John, while they're filling out this last question here, have you noticed the influx of crowdsourced data, like Waze, starting to challenge CAD integration? It's like the best value source of incident detection? That's a great question to ask.
So Johnny Mack here. I've done some informal comparison between what we have in the CAD map and what Waze is showing, just out of curiosity. a lot of the Waze data is not, I could see it as being better than nothing, but you see a lot of duplication. You also basically, anything with a squad car added, unless there's obvious damage to a vehicle, is going to be put in as a traffic stop or a visible speed trap, which is not very accurate. I did see, and of course, you know, what somebody's subjective opinion of a serious accident is. I did see one or two, probably the niche that where it would be useful for us would be the traffic blocking incident in slow traffic that does not generate a 911 call but still screws up traffic. So people are maybe more comfortable in blinking an icon on Waze instead of calling 911. So that subset of incidents would be useful. I guess that's where I would see it on our side.
Okay. John McClellan, one other question. Wisconsin DOT has a question in the box about how do you use the landmarks for the common name location, or do you use them, I should say? Are there any challenges related to, like, non-standard location naming conventions?
So CAD, so the way that Intergraph CAD is set up, that you have the commonplace names, and those are agreed upon, primarily been put in by State Patrol, and if there's something new, that can be added in with their IT tech. So most things are entered as a commonplace name, and then that snaps to a lat long. So that snaps to a specific lat long, which then carries, you know, that whole thing. You know, East 94 ramp to Cedar will come out as one lat long. It is possible to manually put things in on the map. You can click on a spot if there's not a commonplace. But pretty much the metro free, or pretty much the state freeway system has some sort of commonplace that you can just type in. There is also for the phase 2 911 calls, it will. I know the patrol dispatchers can push a button, and that will take that lat long and then try to snap it to a commonplace. So that at least that works for the freeway. I don't know how that works for the city streets or what that does. I don't know.
John, how does MnDOT handle the legal concerns with recording cameras, or do you record cameras, I should say?
Yep, so we record all the cameras, and it's basically public data. It's public data, and it's available for 4 days. And if the request comes in, and we handle all requests are handled equally, whether it's State Patrol or a citizen or the media, it's all handled. And I'm pretty much the lucky guy to handle all of those in the metro, so for better or for worse.
Do you get many? Do you find
anywhere from one to ten a day? A good day is one or two. A crummy day is like a dozen.
Okay. Another question, because I'm actually now working from the chat box for those of you on the phone. Paul is asking this general question to all presenters. So I'll walk through each of you if you're on the phone. He's asking if the state has a state GIS system, and do state agencies utilize a single source base map, or is it in-house developed, Google, or what type of? So he's asking a mapping question. Robert Heller, are you on the phone still?
Yes, I am.
You see,
Florida's got a single vendor and base map that all DOT is supposed to use, and we use the same one, or SunGuide uses the same one. The same thing is true in New Hampshire Compass.
John Horner, how about you guys?
The DOT does have a standard data set, or GIS data, but the 911 centers don't necessarily use that. So we rely on latitude, longitude, and similar to what the other speakers have said, wherever possible, we try to get a common description of the CAD system. It's pretty typical that there is a human-readable description of the location, and that's a pretty high priority field.
Thank you. How about you, John McClellan?
Yeah. So the hard part is that you have to geo match up those commonplace names or the street addresses or mile points, stuff like that have to be coded into the map. So I know State Patrol just finished, I think, a negotiation to use TomTom for their base map for CAD. Our ATMS software uses OpenStreets as a base map, but then the actual devices are hand drawn in using the software to do the base freeway map that then has the detection on it. And then I think there's some other common maps, but I think that's the tricky part, is that you have to put in those commonplace names and the things that may not exist on a base map.
Okay. Another question. I think this is, I'm not sure, John McClellan, I think this is directed towards you. The question is that do other law enforcement agencies work incidents on the freeways? And if so, how are the CAD feeds read, if at all?
Yeah, so we do, state patrols is the primary for state highways and interstates in the state. There are a couple of areas that have been essentially been ceded to the locals, or in some cases a local agency gets a 911 call and they just respond, and whether they notify state is up to them whether they do it or not. And that is a problem, and that's a trend that's come up in the last 2 years, and it's created some delays in the whole notification process. So right now we are not getting anybody else's CAD feed. We're very interested in it. Hennepin County, which is the most populous county, it's what Minneapolis is in, they've been using FatPot for a few years, and I think they're still looking at that, and we've talked to them and made some attempts to try to get into the FatPot feed from Hennepin County. So that's probably what we would look for, is to at least pull in to do something, not integrate it in, but at least have it as a view only for the other local agencies.
Okay, John. Also, I think the camera video recording question generated another one. I think somebody is looking for. I guess the question is that who handles the request for the camera video, and do you have a separate unit that just works with them?
Oh, I wish that'd be the cloning machine. No, it's me and then my boss if I'm gone. We're hopefully going to get some more staff, but basically it we try to have it go through, historically we've had it be either be the supervisor here as the person that does it, and then in the greater Minnesota districts there are some cameras, there's a lot fewer cameras, but it would be the district traffic engineer be the one responsible for doing it, because you never know which one is going to get the subpoena. I probably get, I don't know, a couple of subpoenas a year, but haven't had to actually show up in court in a few years, so that's been good. But it ends up being, for me, it ends up being between 1 and 2 hours a day basically dealing with video requests.
Well, John, do you know Ray Hellevent? Do you know Ray?
I do not.
Okay. He has a great comment for you in the chat box as well. So
I see that.
With that being said, let me move on. I know that just as a wrap-up, these have been three different great presentations. I hope you have all enjoyed them. Robert Heller from Southwest Research, John Horner from Q-Free, John McClellan from MnDOT, I can't say enough to thank you for providing us with, this is like a step one for the coalition. We have a project that's been funded to look at further developing CAD integration guidelines and some working steps for users of CAD. So what you have in front of you right now is the contact information for myself as well as the three speakers. Please feel free to continue to email them if you have more questions. Know that the presentations will be posted on our website, as well as the presentations, everything has been recorded so that you could listen if you want to go back and check something out. For those of you that have signed up and registered and are attending here, you will receive an email with a link that tells you where to go when we will also have some minutes when it's up and ready. And lastly, you probably sometime next week, those of you will receive a 12-question survey. It's kind of the next step of our deeper dive analysis into CAD integration that will ask you a couple yes or no questions about types of incidents, filtering. We wanted to hold off and have you all listen to these presentations first, and then hopefully get a little more feedback from you, because the end game for the coalition is sometime in May of next year to hold a workshop, specifically a day and a half to deal with CAD integration and to really get into some of the nuts and bolts to help agencies as they move forward. All righty. So with that being said, we hope you've enjoyed it. It's 2:34, so I'm 4 minutes over. Please feel free to email me. Joanna, do you have anything else to add to the webinar?
If you've
I've started a private chat and asked you for additional information. If you've only signed in with possibly your first name or just a agency name or even just a district, if you can either contact Denise Marco, or if you received an information about this webinar, you can respond back to that at Nicole Prochnow at, KMJ Consulting. We can make sure that you get the follow-up information.
All righty. With that being said, we hope you all have a great day, and please feel free to provide us feedback. We love to hear about it. All righty. Thank you. Bye now.